I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. A little over a year ago, Attorney General John Ashcroft went on a cross-country road tour promoting his controversial Patriot Act as an effective tool in countering terrorism. It was his own personal rebuttal to those who claim that the Patriot Act curtails civil liberties.
The cause we have chosen is just. The course we have chosen is constitutional. The course we have chosen is preserving lives. For 2 years, Americans have been safe. Because we are safer, our liberties are more secure.
John Ashcroft offered his letter of resignation to the president even before the outcome of this election was known. However, it was only announced last night. In that letter, Ashcroft claims that, quote, "The objective of securing the safety of Americans from crime and terror has been achieved." And while that raises its own questions about the actual safety of this country, the questions that will follow John Ashcroft's 4 years as Attorney General will look at how he has changed the balance of civil liberties. That's the debate we've been listening to. There is the Patriot Act and the apprehension of hundreds of people after 9/11. So, what are your thoughts on Ashcroft's legacy? Did he go too far, or was he part of a team that in fact did keep the country safe? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We have a number of guests who are going to be joining us today. And I want to begin, if I can, with David Cole, who is Georgetown University Law School professor and a critic of Attorney General Ashcroft. And David, if I can, I'm going to quote you from Mr. Ashcroft's farewell message to his colleagues at the Department of Justice. This is what he said. He said, "I express my gratitude to God for each day the sun rises on a free and safe America. For the past 3 years, my every working day has begun with a report, a catalog of the murderous acts being plotted against Americans. That we have passed these 3 years in safety and security is a credit to you in the Justice Department, but it would be the height of arrogance to assume we achieved this alone. The Psalms remind us, quote, unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stands guard in vain." And now back to Mr. Ashcroft. "And as I take my leave of this privileged post, I know that our efforts have not been in vain." So he's talking about a safer America. He's talking specifically in other remarks about no terrorist acts since 9/11. David Cole, tough to criticize those 2 points, is it not?
Well, there certainly has been no terrorist attack in the United States since 9/11. I don't know that we're necessarily a safer America, and I think that it's hard for him to claim credit for the absence of terrorist attacks. I think the military can take some credit for going over to Afghanistan, knocking out the headquarters of al-Qaeda, capturing or killing most of their leaders at this point, putting out of commission the Taliban support that it had, and putting them on the run. But, you know, the Bush administration often boasts that it's captured three-quarters of al-Qaeda's leaders, notably not one captured by John Ashcroft in the United States. And many of John Ashcroft's measures were undertaken in the name of a concern that there were al-Qaeda sleeper cells here in the United States. Yet here we are 3 years later, and the best they can point to is this group of young men in Lackawanna who, you know, yes, went at the behest of a charismatic religious leader to an al-Qaeda training camp, but came back to the United States, were here for a year and a half, took no steps toward any kind of criminal activity, not even the most petty crime. And that's the closest thing, that's the only thing that they can even argue constitutes an al-Qaeda terrorist sleeper cell that they've identified. They locked up 5,000 foreign nationals in anti-terrorism preventive detention measures since 9/11. And how many stand convicted of a terrorist crime at this point? Zero. John Ashcroft's record is zero for 5,000. They brought in 80,000 men from Arab and Muslim countries for registration, fingerprinting, photographing, and the like, on the theory that we might find some terrorists. Not one convicted of any act of terrorism. They called in 8,000 young men for interviews by the FBI simply because they're from Arab and Muslim countries. Again, on the theory that we'd find terrorists, not one convicted of a crime of terrorism. So I think it's very, you know, yes, there have not been any attacks, and we're all thankful for that. But I think John Ashcroft really can't really take point to very much that can take credit for that. And I think what he can take credit for is a tremendous residue of resentment and alienation in the Arab and Muslim communities that he has targeted in the United States,
David, I'm going to ask you to just hold on for half a second because I want to make sure that our listeners know we're going to hear from some other voices here. One of them is Shannon Coffin. He was Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department Civil Division, worked under Attorney General John Ashcroft. Shannon's now working as a partner at the law firm of Steptoe & Johnson and writes for the National Review Online. In your piece today, Shannon, you're very complimentary of John Ashcroft. So where do you take issue specifically with what David Cole is saying?
Well, let me just start by acknowledging before David did that I was one of his law students at Georgetown. So before he tries to preempt me with that, I have a great deal of respect for him and learned a lot from him. However, the facts were not something that I did learn from him. The fact of the matter is that our efforts in prosecuting terrorism have been substantial under John Ashcroft. And the example that David uses, the Lackawanna Six, is a key example of the difference in worldviews that he and I and certainly John Ashcroft would have. The Lackawanna Six trained in Afghanistan in an al-Qaeda training camp. And David would wait until they're on the precipice of a terrorist attack, but the laws of the United States don't require that, and these folks were convicted of supporting terrorist activity, and there have been a number of other people who the Department of Justice have gotten plea agreements with and gotten convictions of. Like Ayman Faris, who cased the Brooklyn Bridge and other New York City landmarks looking for opportunities for terrorism.
So no question in your mind, Shannon, that the country is safer for the past 3 year stewardship of John Ashcroft at the Department of Justice.
Well, John Ashcroft's role at the Department of Justice has had a major impact on disrupting terror networks, on getting at their funds, on getting behind front organizations in the United States, Muslim charities operating as fronts for terrorist organizations in this country have been broken up. I have no question in my mind that it's been a major part. And yes, you're right, David, the military has played a role. But law enforcement and intelligence under John Ashcroft's stewardship have played a major role in keeping this country safe.
And David Cole, it is often said of people who criticize the Patriot Act that those people, and I'm counting you among them for the purposes of this question, haven't ever really come to terms with the fact that so much changed after 9/11. What do you say to that?
Well, I think a lot did change after 9/11, and I think we've now seen a number of bodies of experts look at that question and issue reports on what went wrong before 9/11 and what we needed to do to change it. And for the most part, it was not that we weren't locking up thousands and thousands of foreign nationals as suspected terrorists who had nothing to do with terrorism. That was not the problem. It wasn't that we weren't vigorously prosecuting people for going abroad and attending a training camp where we spent a year and a half watching them when they came back and they took no steps whatsoever to threaten us at all. Those were not the problems. The problems were a failure of a lack of resources committed to the problem, a failure of information sharing, a failure of sufficient emphasis put on analysis of data, not sort of unleashing the government to engage in political spying, as John Ashcroft did with his loosening of the guidelines on FBI spying, which now allow them to go into any church, any mosque, any political meeting in the country without any reason to believe that anything criminal is being planned. And what we know, you know, is that when law enforcement officials aren't focused on crime, and terrorism is a crime. So if the requirement that you focus on crime is not shouldn't be a hindrance. But when they stop focusing on crime, they quickly move to political dissent, and we saw that under J. Edgar Hoover, and we saw that under John Ashcroft. And I think I go back to my figures, which Shannon has not challenged. 0 for 5,000 on the foreign nationals detained. 0 for 80,000 on the special registration.
Go ahead, Shannon. Jump in there.
David, sorry, let me speak to your over 5,000 because it overlooks a major part of the prosecution of the war on terror, and that is that terrorists can't commit acts of terrorism on U.S. soil if they're not on U.S. soil. And as part, as you well know, and I know you're a big critic of, but as part of the war, prosecution of the war on terror, the Department of Justice has been vigorously enforcing the immigration laws, and people who may have connections to terrorism, who are out of status and who are illegally in this country, are simply sent out of the country where they can't do harm on U.S. soil.
But John Ashcroft's policy, I mean, and this is something John Ashcroft often says. He says, we've deported over 500 people, foreign nationals, in connection with the investigation of terrorism. But what he doesn't say, and what Shannon didn't say to the listeners, is that John Ashcroft's policy was not to deport if the person has any connections to terrorism whatsoever, because that's the last thing you'd want to do, is send someone who's a terrorist, who has connections to terrorism, abroad where he can act without our ability to watch him and plot further attacks against us. And so the policy was hold until cleared. We won't deport you until we determine that you have no connections to terrorism. So those 515 deportees are misses, not hits, in terms of finding actual terrorists in the war.
David, I know you have to go, and so I want to thank you for being with us for this part of the program.
Thanks a lot.
David Cole is Georgetown University Law School professor, legal affairs correspondent for The Nation, and a columnist for Legal Times. He was talking about the legal experts who have been looking at questions of civil liberties and questions that will be asked about the Ashcroft legacy for some time to come, and I have one of them in the studio with me here. Harvey Silverglade is counsel to the Boston law firm of Good and Cormier, and Harvey, nice to have you back in the studio.
Good to be back here.
We've got just a couple of minutes before we have to take a break. You've been listening to the two perspectives from Shannon and David. In terms of judging Ashcroft's legacy, what's the one thing that you would point to?
I think that what Ashcroft has done is returned us to a sort of the look and feel of what it was like during the late 60s and early 70s when the Department of Justice and the FBI were intent on suppressing dissent to the Vietnam War. And there is an awful lot of that kind of, speaking of terror, kind of mild terror that's been loosed by the department. So there's been a whole change in the culture that we're operating in. I represent, for example, some Harvard students who have been visited repeatedly by the FBI, each visit a little bit more threatening. And for me, it's a deja vu. I've been practicing law since 67. I've seen this before, and it happened during the Vietnam War era, and we're right back to where we were then. So we've got a look and feel problem about a free society.
All right. It's a really interesting moment to try and judge the legacy of John Ashcroft, because his resignation coming just days after the re-election of President Bush leads us to think that there is a majority of Americans, voting Americans, who were giving their mark of approval to the way that the justice system has changed and turned under the stewardship of Ashcroft. This is your opportunity to tell us what you think has changed, whether or not Ashcroft has made this a safer country, or in fact one where you're feeling less secure. We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection. The resignation of Attorney General John Ashcroft was announced by the White House last night. This hour on the program, a chance to assess what's changed in the country, the legacy of that man in the Bush administration. And there's lots to be checked off if you go down the list of his pushing for tougher use of the death penalty and a greater crackdown on internet pornography, subpoenaing the medical records of abortion providers and being tougher on gun-related crimes. The dragnet that David Cole mentioned, bringing in foreign nationals, young Arab men, in the months after 9/11 is certainly a key way of looking at the legacy of Ashcroft, as is the Patriot Act, that complicated bit of legislation that is still so much a point of debate as people look at how that has changed the country. With me here in the studio in Boston, Harvey Silverglate. He's a specialist in criminal defense and civil liberties law and a lawyer here in Boston. Shannon Coffin is with us from a studio in Washington. He was Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department under John Ashcroft. And Shannon, just a clarification from you. You made a point earlier in the program about this Lyman Ferris case, this is the fellow who was trying to blow up the Brooklyn Bridge. Am I right about that?
Well, he was arrested casing the bridge, and pled to his participation in terrorist activity as a result of that.
I'm just wondering why you raised it. Does it mark something for you? A change in the way that the Justice Department works?
Well, it's simply a response to the notion that there have been no convictions for terrorist activity in the United States. The numbers don't bear that out.
And, well, Harvey, do you know something about this case?
Yes, there's a little bit more to the case. In fact, Farris tried to withdraw his plea in open court, claiming that he was pressured into pleading guilty because he was threatened that unless he pleaded guilty, he would be designated an enemy combatant and he would be taken out of the criminal justice system. That was the Hobson's choice that was given to Farris. Of course he pleaded guilty. Wouldn't you if the alternative was being held for the rest of your life without a trial? And I warned you, that was before the Supreme Court inserted its jurisdiction into those enemy combatant cases. This is the phony front, the kind of Potemkin village that the Ashcroft Justice Department has set up. They claim that they've made us safer, but what have they done? They claim this is a guy who pleaded guilty, and he, of course, did under the kind of pressure that I've just described.
Okay,
completely phony case.
Let's go back to Shannon. Shannon.
And the plea hasn't been withdrawn because it was voluntary. I mean, that's what the critics are missing here.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We're bringing into the program now Richard Benveniste, who's a member of the 9/11 Commission, a partner in the firm of Mayor Brown Rao and Ma, I should say. Richard, I think you know John Ashcroft quite well.
Well, we had some opportunity to interact.
The participation of yours in the 9/11 Commission that sticks out in my mind was your reference back to Watergate time when you, and we've had a couple of references to Mr. Ashcroft's tenure here as, you know, like the Hoover times, like the times around Watergate. Do you draw any of those parallels?
I think Mr. Ashcroft will be remembered for a very provocative time as Attorney General. In many respects, his policies and words were regressive, even reactionary. And I would point to the very beginning when he ordered the draping of classical sculptures at the Justice Department, which depicted the human form. I think his tone and the substance of his tenure was one which provocatively was contrary to our best traditions of freedom of speech and civil liberties. By attacking those who had voiced criticism over various important policy decisions and suggesting that the people were unpatriotic and were giving aid and comfort to the enemy by exercising their constitutional rights to speak out was very divisive and unfortunate.
I wonder, Richard, if any attorney general in the past 2 or 3 years could have done the work that might have been required to ensure the safety of the country without incurring the anger and the disdain of people who thought that maybe he was going too far in curtailing civil liberties. You know, is this someone who says, right is right, and I'll accept the consequences?
Well, if you get it right, that would be a reasonable position. But if you overreact and you unnecessarily call into question civil rights and liberties that, after all, is the basis of what we are protecting in this country from those who would do us harm, then I think you have not done the job to the best expectations of the populace.
Okay, Mr. Benveniste, thanks for being with us. A chance, Shannon, for you to make your case. You were there. You were helping make these decisions.
Well, the fundamental thing that Mr. Benvenista misses is that John Ashcroft recognized that the most important right that the government can secure for the people is the right to life. And without it, we're not debating whether or not it's important to have drapes over statues. The sort of...
You're not talking about the code interpretation of right to life here. You're talking about... I'm
talking about the fundamental right of you and I to live in freedom, and that is the security of this nation depends upon our ability to protect this nation from the enemies from without. And John Ashcroft recognizes that, and he recognizes that the other liberties that we all debate about mean nothing if we're not living.
Let's take our first call, if we can, from Charlottesville, Virginia, and Rick's on the line. Hi, Rick.
Hello.
What do you think?
Well, I think that this is his resignation is the pretty much the administration's way of trying to soften itself. I mean, to my way of thinking, John Ashcroft was someone who was just looking for a reason to curtail our civil liberties, and 9/11 was just a boon, a gift to the man.
What do you think that he was intending to do prior to that? It's a pretty harsh charge.
Yeah, it is a harsh charge, but when we look at his record before he was in the Senate, you know, he had amassed a record that was completely anti-environmental, completely against a woman's choice as far as giving birth is concerned. You know, he scared the hell out of most of me and most of my friends, and you know.
And to the claim then, Rick, that you and most of your friends probably needed that kind of a scare in terms of reaction to 9/11, what do you say to that?
I'm sorry, would you repeat the question?
That somebody had to throw a scare into the country after 9/11.
No, I think we were plenty scared enough without having to overreact. I mean, you know, the way our country has reacted since then is we're creating more terrorists. We're creating more terrorists than we can kill.
Rick's observation that they were looking for an excuse to crack down is very, I think, on the mark, because a lot of the provisions of the USA Patriot Act had been brought up time and time again by the Department of Justice and had not succeeded in getting enacted into legislation.
Give me an example of one, if you can.
Well, right. this Section 215, the FBI's desire to be able to scoop up records. This is, you know, the famous librarian subpoena provision.
Find out what's on your library card, what you've been checking out.
Yeah,
supposedly.
But of course it applies to a very broad array of records, and the subpoena can be laid on record keepers. And the crucial part about that piece of legislation is that it provides that the person getting the subpoena, the librarian, is not allowed to disclose to the person whose records are subpoenaed that they're the subject of an FBI investigation. So they cannot go, the person who is being investigated cannot go to court in order to try to contest the subpoena because he doesn't know it's been subpoenaed. That is a power the FBI had been seeking for a long time, and they slipped it into this legislation. As you know, nobody in Congress read the legislation because it substituted the night before it was voted on. So nobody read it. That was slipped in. The FBI had been trying to get that enacted for decades.
Let's go to Shannon Coffin.
Let's talk.
You were part of this, right, Shannon?
Well, I was not part of the legislative process, but I defended Section 215 in court.
Right.
Let's talk about the realities. First of all, it's not a subpoena. It's not a unilateral act by the Attorney General to issue a document and require the search of records. As a matter of fact, a court has to approve any search under Section 215. But the most important factor, and one that's been overlooked in discussing Section 215 for the last 3 years, is when the lawsuit was brought by the ACLU in Detroit 2 years after the enactment of Section 215 in the Patriot Act. The Attorney General let it be known that he had not used Section 215. He had not sought authorization from the court for a Section 215 order in the 2 years that Section 215 had been on the books. So there's a lot of hysterics that are going on with respect to the Patriot Act that simply have no foundation in fact. It is an important tool that might be used in appropriate circumstances, but at this point...
So it's never been used.
Well, the Attorney General reports to Congress every 6 months on his use of all the provisions of the Patriot Act.
Right.
As of October of 2003, it had not been used. I haven't seen the public reports on its use since then.
It has been used since then, but first of all, the Attorney General couldn't tell the public whether or not it's been used, because that's the whole point. You're not allowed to say whether or not such a subpoena
has been issued.
But let me just point out, this business about a court has to approve it. It is a special national security court that operates in secret. Only one side gets to appear before that court.
That's been in operation for years.
I understand that, but it is now suddenly being used a lot. And the court it has never turned down an FBI request for a 215 subpoena. Never.
Well,
that's quite an absurd proposition.
There hadn't been any 215 requests for 2 years since 215 was on the books. So yes, zero were requested and zero were denied. But zero were authorized as well.
In the last 2 years? That's simply not true.
1-800-423-8255 to Quincy, Massachusetts. Now Harold's on the line. Hi, Harold.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm fine. What are you thinking?
Okay, this is my thought. I think our intelligence has determined that the attack of 9/11 probably was formulated for about 5 or 6 years before they actually made the attack on us. Is it possible that they're just lying low and formulating another 4 or 5 years planning? Or is Mr. Ashcroft's decrees the ingredient? I think where they've decimated a lot of the al-Qaeda through the military
right.
in Afghanistan is the main retardant rather than that. And one other thing, is the Patriot Act a predecessor for the Enabling Act?
Let's stick, if we can, with this question of the safety of the country. I mentioned Shannon at the beginning of the program, the quote in Mr. Ashcroft's resignation letter where he says, "The objective of securing the safety of Americans from crime and terror has been achieved." I have to tell you, when I read that, I thought to myself, wow. I mean, that's kind of a blanket statement, the sort that could come back to haunt him, his predecessor, or someone like that, to say it's been done, the work's done.
Well, I don't think what he meant is that the work is done, but that the work has been successful to date, because we have to be ever vigilant. Remember, this is a man who woke up every day, got to his office, and spent the first hour of every day reviewing intelligence reports about people who were threatening to destroy the United States of America. So the burden has been enormous on him. And the charges against him have simply been overblown. You have to remember that a Democrat, Senator Dianne Feinstein from California, went to bat for the Patriot Act and its application, saying that she had asked the ACLU for instances of abuse of the Patriot Act. They emailed her back and said they had none. That's the reality of the Patriot Act, and the rest is vitriol and hysterics.
You're listening to The Connection. My name's Dick Gordon. Harvey, vitriol, hysterics on this from...
I don't doubt that Ashcroft had a lot of weight on his shoulders waking up in the morning knowing that there had been a huge terrorist attack and worrying about another one. And, of course, we're hardly out of the woods. It would be ridiculous to think that we had, quote, won the war on terror. This is a worldwide phenomenon that's been going on for at least 20 years and will probably go on for our lifetimes. However, Ashcroft really did go overboard. His attack, for example, on free speech, the speech of his critics claiming that they aided and abetted the enemy, is really a throwback to the McCarthy days. Completely unnecessary, unnecessarily divisive, and assaultive on the fundamental liberty that we have, and that's the liberty of speech. Some of his prosecutions are also invasive of speech. You know, there was that 34-year-old Muslim Saudi graduate student, Al-Hussein, who was prosecuted in a federal criminal case in Idaho. He was a student at the University of Idaho, and the charge against him was that he had sponsored and he had run websites that included calls by various people for jihad. It included a lot of people who were critical of calls for jihad. And he was indicted for expert advice and assistance being given to terrorists. Well, a jury of good Midwestern Americans acquitted him as soon as the judge instructed them as to the scope of the First Amendment. What business did Ashcroft have even indicting that kid because he was engaged in fully protected, constitutionally protected First Amendment activity?
Okay,
that is an indication of what's wrong with this Department of Justice.
This is something that David Cole was talking about, Shannon, and I'm not sure if I gave you the sort of adequate opportunity to give us your perspective. The point is being made here by Harvey, earlier by David, that in all those incarcerations, in all those registrations, in all those deportations, there was no one case that provided the, aha, see, we've got somebody. This is working. This is important.
I just don't think the record bears that out. As we've talked about, the cells in Oregon, the cells in Northern Virginia, the cells in Lackawanna. The fact of the matter is we've gone aggressively after terrorists where we can find them.
But have these people been convicted of anything?
Yes, absolutely. There were convictions in all of those cases. So yes, there were convictions. And David's characterization of our deportation efforts are simply not true. I mean, yes, we cleared a lot of people, but there were plenty of people who were suspected that we might have had information on of having ties to terrorism that we simply got out of the country.
Although you do make the acknowledgement in the piece that you wrote this morning that, you know, this is he was a divisive man. He was going to cause these kinds of debates.
Well, I don't think I used the word divisive at all.
No, I'm paraphrasing.
There's been controversy, and I think John Ashcroft's ability to stand up to that controversy and make the right decision for what's good for the country has been good for the country.
All right, Connection listeners, were they the right decisions, and were they good for the country? On the morning after the announcement of the resignation of Attorney General John Ashcroft, a chance to hear from you. We're at 1-800-423-8255, measuring the legacy of the Attorney General who has been in charge of the Justice Department for the 3 years after 9/11. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection this hour. We're measuring the legacy of John Ashcroft, whose resignation was made public just last evening. Shannon Coffin is with us from a studio in Washington. He writes for the National Review Online. He was Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department Civil Division, working under and with John Ashcroft. Harvey Silverglade is here with me in the Boston studio. He is a criminal defense lawyer and expert in civil liberties. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to take a call now from Louisville, Kentucky, and Gretchen's with us. Hi, Gretchen.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And first of all, I want to say that I think this is an important discussion to have now and throughout the time when we have a new attorney general. My concern is regard to safety. I feel much less safe in our community. And the reason why I feel much less safe is that I work with immigrant survivors of domestic violence, rape, and human trafficking, and know at this point that the Ashcroft reign has really sent mixed messages to immigrants, and I'm concerned about that for two reasons.
Give me an example of what you mean by a mixed message to immigrants.
Sure. Under Ashcroft, I think the Justice Department has done a very great job at addressing trafficking in persons. They've brought forth some great prosecutions. They've made it possible for immigrant victims of these horrible crimes, modern-day slavery, to come forward and get protection in return for providing testimony that leads to the prosecution of very dangerous individuals. Many of them are non-citizens. On the other hand, under Ashcroft's reign, he was also responsible for issuing a memo urging the fact that local police should enforce federal immigration laws, a move that was really met with much resistance from advocates for battered women, saying that, you know, this kind of a message puts immigrant victims at much more risk. Now, my concern is, first of all, for the safety of my my clients who are immigrant victims who may feel that it is not safe to come forward to prosecute the crimes of violence against them. But my second concern is that, you know, by sending the message that it's not safe for immigrants to come forward and give testimony about crimes against them, I think we also limit the cooperation of immigrants who are willing to be informants about crimes of terrorism. And in fact, that is my reason why I feel less safe as a community. One, that immigrant victims, I feel, are less safe. There are many messages now sent that it's not safe for them to come forward to the police. And secondly, that in that way, we as a community are less safe because those same immigrants are going to be less likely to come forward if they have information about terrorism. With that, I'll take my comment off.
All right. I appreciate your call. I'm going straight to Shannon Coffin on that one. Shannon, go ahead.
Well, the caller's observation is the first observation is very key. John Ashcroft and the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice have focused very heavily on human trafficking. And in this year alone have brought charges against 47 human trafficking defendants in 26 different cases. It's a very serious issue, basically tantamount to human slavery in our time from many third world countries. And John Ashcroft has focused on that and broken a number of trafficking syndicates. On the immigration point, look, the point is that we have an enormous immigration problem and we have an enormous number of people in this country illegally. And in enforcing the terrorism laws and preventing terrorism, the one of the most useful tools that we have in our belt is the rigorous enforcement of the laws. So the position of John Ashcroft that state and local law enforcement may be involved in apprehending immigration violators, first of all, is lawful, and secondly, is an important part of that. Does that mean that every illegal alien from Mexico who comes into this country is in danger of local police picking them up? No, I don't think so. We just simply don't have the resources for that, and everyone recognizes that. But in the war on terrorism, that policy has been an important part and may be an important part in the future.
And as Shannon points out, it might be lawful, but Harvey, when Gretchen talks about these recent immigrant communities kind of closing up and closing ranks, are you seeing this in your own work?
Yes, and an atmosphere has been created where immigrants are really afraid to show their faces, and that's very bad because, first of all, we need the cooperation of immigrant communities in order to help us understand what is going on in terms of terrorism. But I want to point out that the Department of Justice has made it hard not only for immigrants who are not citizens, but also immigrants who are citizens. Remember that the two of the so-called enemy combatants locked up in naval brigs down in South Carolina are American citizens, the cases that went to the Supreme Court, Hamdi and Padilla. Those were citizens who were being held incommunicado until the Supreme Court intervened. Now, were they really guilty of any crimes of terror? Well, I think the answer is Hamdi has already been sent back to Saudi Arabia, and the case against Padilla has not yet been presented. My guess is that he'll be acquitted and he'll be released because there is a lot of smoke and mirrors here, but not much substance. And the immigrant communities, citizens and non-citizens, are being terrified.
I want to go straight back to our lines, and that's to Westboro, Massachusetts. Samuel's with us. Hi, Samuel.
Hi.
Tell me what you're thinking.
Well, basically, I want to give you the perspective of an Arab American. Since 9/11, I mean, we have bore the brunt of everything that's called war on terror here at home.
How long have you been in the United States, Samuel?
About 22 years. I came here as a teenager with my family.
Okay.
And basically, we want to cooperate. We want to help. But we're treated as suspects. We're treated with suspicion. And I have relatives, you know, and knocks on our doors from the FBI, threatening us point blank, saying, you know, if something happens nearby you, we're basically going to pick you up for it, no matter what. I was told by the FBI agents that to my face, at my house.
Samuel, do you blame the nationality of the 19 hijackers for that change in attitude, or do you blame the outgoing Attorney General, John Ashcroft?
I think there's there's very legitimate reason for us to worry about terrorism. And I'm not complaining, saying that these are Arabs, they're from Saudi Arabia. But the FBI doesn't know if you're Christian or Muslim. It doesn't know if you're Lebanese or Moroccan. It doesn't know, as long as you are basically, they ask you, are you religious? They ask me, are you religious? Do you go to the mosque? Do you listen to any sheikhs or listen to any fatwas? Do you follow any decrees? I mean, these are very disturbing issues, and there's been in the last 6 months a campaign of intimidating Arabs. I mean, what is this? And on top of it, they say, oh, we're just trying to protect the country. In addition, I would like to say Mr. Ashcroft and Mr. Bush and the right-wing Christian fundamentalists have had a campaign against Muslim growth in America for many, many years.
Samuel, I'm just going to ask you to hold on for half a second and ask Shannon to speak directly to you. Don't hang up. You're welcome to stay with us. Shannon, go ahead.
Well, Samuel, the reality is that Islamic fundamentalists were responsible for 9/11, and so rooting out that part of Islamic fundamentalism, the violent part, that is an important part of the war on terrorism. And I know that we welcome the cooperation of the Muslim community in this country, and recognize that you've played a very fundamental role in helping us keep this country safe.
See, there's something, though, fundamentally crazy about, and I have heard many people tell me the same thing that Samuel just said, that they're approached by the FBI and they're asked questions like, do you believe in fatwas? Well, what terrorist is going to say yes? You know, the question is clearly meant to intimidate. It is not meant to elicit information. And that's what's so worrisome about this. This is not really genuine anti-terror work.
Well, that's just a silly charge. I mean, the fact of the matter is we've been trying to get information from all sources about the threats to the United States. And it's a baseless charge.
Let's go back to Samuel here. Your own experience, Samuel.
What I would like to see is a more sane, logical, less religiously motivated approach to the whole question of terrorism. I would like the questions, I would like the debate to move on from this big threat of terrorism to our policy issues and what we are doing overseas, supporting dictatorships, supporting Israel blindly. We are going to solve terrorism only when we look in the mirror and see what we have done by creating this terrorism through our foreign policy.
Samuel, I thank you for being with us on the program. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Next call from Nashua, New Hampshire, and Terry's on the line. Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just driving along in the car here, and I just want to kind of observe as a conservative Republican that I don't think John Ashcroft is you know, kind of from a personality or a conviction standpoint, the issue. I think it's perfectly logical to me anyway that, kind of on the morning of September the 12th, kind of the whole world overreacted in every direction. And I think, understandably so. It was a stunning, horrible, catastrophic event. And I think to expect everybody to be moderate on either side of this question, kind of having had that happen is ridiculous and probably even, naive.
Okay, so jump this ahead for us. It's been 3 years since that sort of initial overreaction. Are you comfortable with the balance right now?
Well, my point is that I don't think Ashcroft is the issue. I think he's a lightning rod, and I think that's probably not being fair to him. I think the point is that it is a natural overreaction, and I'm totally convinced and encouraged that we will begin to moderate. And that, from the French Revolution, you can pick any catastrophic moment in history, and it's, I think it's called a thermidorian reaction, actually. It's very natural, and we will find our way on this issue in this country. And what the next attorney general, I'll bet anybody the best dinner in town, will be viewed as more moderate, and I don't see how he could help but be viewed as more moderate.
Now, leave your number with the program. I may take you up on that.
Yeah, I'll take you up on that.
No, but let's be fair. I mean, I think that the point that he's making is that this ought to be a really strong and vigorous debate between the people who make it their business to defend civil liberties and the people who are charged with the responsibility of keeping the country safe. And what Terry seems to be saying is that the sort of vigorousness of the debate's not necessarily a bad thing for the country.
Oh, I think that debate's a fabulous thing for the country. I just wish that it were a more honest debate. This saying that, you know, Ashcroft, you know, Ashcroft, one of the things he keeps saying is that he has respected civil liberties. He should at least be honest and say, look, I feel that in order to combat terror, we have to restrict liberty. If he had said that, it would be a more honest debate. He was on Koppel last night, and you heard the same thing. Oh, we have respected civil liberties. He hasn't. And let's talk. If he thinks that we cannot have liberty and safety, let him say
so. Go ahead, Shannon.
Well, I just haven't heard a single example of a restricted civil liberty under this administration. Again, it makes a good talking point, but what are we talking about?
What about the Idaho prosecution that fortunately we had a judge who instructed the jury as to what the First Amendment meant? Why didn't the department understand the First Amendment before they indicted this kid?
Because there are ways to support, there are material support, there is material support of terrorism that involves activities that involve speech, whether or not it's speech directly or not.
Like running a public website?
The point of the matter is you can do fundraising that involves speech. You can give speeches to raise money for terrorism. And so there are activities on the fringe that implicate the First Amendment, and in this case, the jury apparently, according to you, got it right.
Shannon,
I don't know a great deal about, so I can't speak to directly.
Nor do I, and I'd like to close, if I can, just with where we go from here. I'm reminded, Shannon, of the Supreme Court saying to the president, a state of war is not a blank check for the president. When we talk about reaction and the aftermath, are we going to see a toning down of the reaction that came after 9/11, and is that sort of whittling away then at the legacy of what John Ashcroft left at the Justice Department?
Look, the Justice Department and the government as a whole have an obligation to balance civil liberties in the fight on the war on terrorism. And it is a mission that permeates the government. It's a mission that permeates the Justice Department. There are a lot of false charges that are being made, but the fact of the matter is every day the balance is made, and every day it will continue to be made.
All right, Shannon, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Dick.
Shannon Coffin, former Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department. Harvey, great to have you back in the program.
It's going to be 4 years of continued fighting.
You're going to be back. All right, Harvey Silverglade is counsel to the Boston law firm of Good & Cormier. Earlier in the program, we talked with David Cole, Georgetown University Law School professor, and Richard Benveniste, a member of the 9/11 Commission. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. We're going to give you a little bit of the musical side of John Ashcroft just to close the program. Gonna send you rockin', reelin' with an emptiness. You must confess that he's out your insides. We got hot shot jocks explaining.